The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 969. It's the 17th of January, 2018. On the podcast today, Colin Bird, Chief Executive Officer and Chairman of Galileo Resources, that's GLR, and Colin goes over some of their projects and talks about expected milestones to come. Also on the podcast, Andy Hollingworth, CEO of Tuple, that's T-O-O-P, and Andy goes over some of the highlights from their final results for the year. Also on the podcast, Roger Murphy, CEO of African Battery Minerals, that's ABM, formerly known as Sula Iron and Gold, but changed the name today, and talks about the new name and the new strategy. Plus, I also have John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel, talking about Codal Minerals and Georgian Mining. Plus, as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Colin Bird, Chief Executive Officer and Chairman of Galileo Resources, GLR ticker. Colin, thanks for joining me. You're becoming a bit of a regular here.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me. And I'm a regular because I think your site gets the message out to the market. So I'm glad to be working with Vox, and thank you very much for inviting me for this interview.
Yeah, but like I said, this is involvement with Galileo Resources. So for people listening right now, Colin, and they're not quite sure what Galileo is all about, could you give them a little dig into the projects in a bit, but could you give them a brief summary as to what Galileo is all about, please?
Yeah. Galileo, like most of the things I do, is driven and specifically driven. And in the case of Galileo, we've got a broad spectrum, and as you say, we'll get onto the projects later, but it's back to base metals, gold, and a near production phosphate. So I guess that Galileo is a little opportunity driven, and by being opportunity driven, it's collected quite a diverse, in terms of country and commodity, portfolio, all of which have got legs of one form or another. So I would call it an emerging junior with a broad-based portfolio, both commodity and country.
Excellent stuff. And as I say, you are a small cap, almost a micro cap here. So, and I see this, you know, I like to look at the micro caps because, you know, it doesn't take a lot for them to move. And on a percentage basis, they can move, you know, massively compared to larger cap stocks. And so it's around about just under £5 million there. So the projects, first and foremost, take us through the Star Zinc project in Zambia. Take us through that, if you could, Colin.
Well, the Star Zinc is our latest acquisition. Star Zinc basically is 40 minutes from the airport, the Lusaka airport in Zambia. Mm-hmm. It's a willemite project, and that means the zinc is hosted in silicates. It's got a stated resource, which has not been defined on a regulatory point of view, of around about 300,000 tonnes. It's around about 20%. So we're talking about an high-grade zinc deposit, willemite silicates, which 10, 15 years ago would be a no-no because, you know, it's so difficult to get the zinc out of the silicate. But in this day and age, it's fairly bog standard, and that's what drew me to the project. Not a lot of work done since Charter Consolidated did work in the 60s, and so that's the sort of thing I like, you know, a database, a concept which has got legs, and we're actually drilling it, Justin, at the moment. So the drill machine's underway there. I'm not allowed to say how many holes that we've drilled and what the prognosis is, but intend shortly to actually update the market on the progress with this drilling program.
Okay, it's excellent stuff. Let's move over to the Glenova Rare Earth Project.
Glenova Rare Earth, I think it's better Glenova Phosphate Project. Now, what's happened there, and we did advise the market that we had interest in the project, and again, we need to update the market again that it's likely that we'll be bringing this project into production as a phosphate project for the fertilizer industry. And the good news is that the tailings, if you like, will be full of the rare earths. So we've done a full economic assessment on the rare earths. They will be available to us and won't be part of any offtake agreement. And the rare earth industry, as you know, is recovering. But we've got a nice little earner there with our phosphate project, and not a big job to bring it into production. It's crushed, grind, float, dry, and then send off to the fertilizer producer. So Glenover has suddenly found its legs, and that often happens in our industry. You know, you go quiet for a while, mm-hmm. and then circumstances change, and then you have a project which is, I guess, lying in the top drawer. All of a sudden, becomes a viable, very interesting project. So that's Glenover. That's Glenover, and we're very, very interested in bringing it into production during the course of this year, hopefully.
Okay. Well, sticking in South Africa, I have a different project. It's Concordia Copper Project. Take us through that, if you could, Colin.
Yeah, well, Concordia Copper Project, we did quite a bit of work there, and it's a very interesting project. The copper is there, without any doubt, but I think the criteria, overall criteria, did not necessarily fit what we went there in the first place. And so we retained a 15% interest, and we will, of course, facilitate that others to do exploration on a more specific model, which I think it will be high-grade underground. And I try to avoid going underground wherever possible, Justin. But, of course, circumstances, again, never say never. There are many instances where one can get very good returns in underground mining. But this time round, we've elected to maintain a 15% interest.
Yeah, okay. And let's move to Nevada. Tell us about the FIRBA project there, if you could, Colin.
Well, we've got a cracking project over there. That's a gold project. We think it's a gold skarn. We're so interested in it that we've actually acquired more and more ground. You might say, well, where's the news? What are you doing? And, you know, in these microcaps, there's a limit to how far you can spread yourself, generally driven by finance. A lot of interest in this project. In a perfect world, Justin, we don't want to joint venture it. You know, these joint ventures, 5, 6, 7 years, you'll know what you've got. You go on other people's timetable. We want to be proactive here. We want to do it ourselves. We've back-boiled it. There's no obligation other than paying your annual rent for the property. We've got a big property, and we want to address it probably in the middle of this year. But I think that, if you know, you have to prioritize when money is the driver. So it's Stars Inc. at the moment. Okay. Followed up by Glenover, or concurrent with Glenover, then hopefully we'll start work on the Nevada project. So, you know, it's a very, as I say, a diverse portfolio, good projects, lots of legs, and I think it's escaped the attention of the market to a certain degree.
Yeah. So you're saying that's a sort of priority there. The Stars Inc. And you mentioned there, you know, you can't stretch yourself too far, and you mentioned about cash resources. And for what, current operations, are you okay for the cash?
Yeah, we're okay for cash. We're quite nicely covered for this Stars Inc. Project. As I say, we're drilling, we're modelling, we're doing all of the things that you do. And I'm trying to really understand this project, because it was presented as a tabular willemite zinc project. I suspect that there might be an element of a stock work, other sources of mineralization, and it has a propensity, I think, to grow. And as you know, the fortunes for zinc at the moment are very good. The fortunes for all base metals are very good, but zinc seems to be one of the metals in demand. So the team's trying to get our heads around this project and this drilling program. Of course, will be the first part of the exercise to hopefully grow the project.
Yeah. Okay, go. Well, listen, if anyone's listening to this right now and likes the sound of these projects and are following it, or other companies as well, unlike we're doing there, but are not following the story at Galileo, give them three reasons, Colin, why they should hit that button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list.
Well, first of all, diverse portfolio. Don't need every project to win. Any one of them is big enough and good enough to, in actual fact, give a considerable shareholder uptick. Reasonably cashed up, and should have very good news flow over the next 6 months. So that, to me, is the underlying fundamentals you want to see in a junior mining company, or indeed any junior company for that matter. Mm-hmm. So that's that. That would be my reasons. Good portfolio, any one of which can score, and if it does, the rest, quite frankly, don't need to.
Yeah. Excellent, Colin. Good to chat to you again. And, you've got lots of things going on, so hopefully we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
I'm sure we will, Justin, and thank you very much for your time again. Thank you very much indeed.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Andy Hollingworth, CEO of Tuple. That's T-O-O-P. Andy, thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Justin.
Now, you've got your financial results out. We'll go through those in a bit. But before we do, for people not aware, as always, I mean, listening right now and not aware of what Tuple does, can you explain, summarise what your business is all about, please, Andy?
Yeah, Tuple is a technology business that is absolutely dedicated to looking after small businesses. Those are businesses with less than 50 employees in the UK market, of which there are over 5 million of those businesses. And we are telco-specific, backed up by our own Merlin software platform, where we provide data connectivity like broadband, like high-speed broadband, lease lines to small businesses, as well as hosted cloud-based telephony, which is a huge growing area in the market, and mobile technology as well to small businesses and small businesses only. We do not deal with consumers. We are absolutely focused on the small business needs of the market.
Yeah, is that focus? I know some people listening right now thinking, okay, so what's the difference between you and the big boys? And you've said this before, but just to reiterate, why would a business choose you over some of the bigger competitors?
Very simple. We are only dedicated to the small business market. Therefore, mm-hmm. we're not blindsided by a high cost to serve 4 million plus consumer customers. We have a very simple transparency in terms of our pricing strategy. So where possible, when a customer signs a 24-month or 36-month contract with us, our pricing is fixed for the period of that contract. And all our UK customer services and customer support is based onshore. And we have a highly scalable software platform that allows the customer to interact with us online if they want. But as importantly, if they want to call into our UK-based customer service people, they get a right first time and some really great customer experience that is backed up by our independent customer experience scores.
Excellent stuff. Well, let's go through your final results for the year ended the 30th of September 2017. Take us through some of the highlights. And I'm looking at double-digit increases here, but take us through the highlights, please.
Yeah, they're a good set of results. Revenue is up by 34%. That revenue growth is driven by our higher margin small business customers, rather than the lower margin wholesale business, which still remains non-strategic. So it's good in a way that the revenue growth is the right revenue that's growing. It's higher margin revenue that's growing. And as a direct correlation to that revenue growth from the small business customers, then gross margin has increased by over 4% and continues on an upward trend. Customer order growth has increased in the year by over 300%. We're receiving an increase of 300% of orders from customers. And as importantly, those customers that are taking services from us are now taking more services per customer. And over 80% of the customers are signing for 2 years or greater. And typically on our cloud-based telephony platform, those customers are signing for 3 years and onwards. So that's fixed, recurring, contracted revenue from those customers. The digital marketing programs continue to deliver great responses, and we are converting on average 43% of all the marketing leads that we generate into contracted orders, which demonstrates, I think, number one, the appeal of Tuple as a business and that fixed price transparent strategy, and secondly, the disruptive nature of our propositions against the market. But 43% conversion rate of all the inquiries we generate from our digital marketing activity, we could be very pleased with.
Yeah.
We are in net customer growth month on month. And as I've said right at the start of this this podcast, is that our customer satisfaction scores, which are independent via Trustpilot, places us right at the top of the market and ahead of the competition. That, for me, serves a great long-term view, because the more pleased your customers are and the better experience you deliver to your customers, the longer your customers stay with you, and hence the lower your churn will be against the market norm.
Yeah, and like I say, it's worth pointing out, you're still loss-making at the moment, but operating losses decreased by 23%.
Yeah, operating losses decreased by 23%. We're always mindful of driving our costs down. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the Merlin platform allows us to be a low-cost business. Yeah. As we scale the marketing, we don't scale the cost. Actually, we just learn how to gain more customers more efficiently and more cost-effectively. We also make sure that the customers that we're gaining are the higher-margin customers. Balance that against our fixed-cost, low-operating environment, then the board believes that we would continue to reduce our operating losses over the coming year.
Excellent stuff. And let's look at some things going forward. How are things looking, Andy?
Well, 2018 has just started. We've accelerated our digital marketing activity. Mm-hmm. We believe as a board that will accelerate further growth. Really, to consolidate that, during November and December, we transitioned to our own in-house sales team and we terminated our outsource relationship. There's a number of reasons why we did that, because we believe that will deliver increased customer growth further. It will also, through having your own sales team, increase the orders per customer, which then increases the gross margin per customer, and all of that for actually a lower operating expense. So having our own team on our own office in the Northwest is a lower cost than the outsource relationship that we had. And importantly, owning the whole sales cycle will further enhance our overall customer experience.
Mm-hmm. Excellent stuff. Well, if anyone's listening right now, Andy, like the sound of this, and I've got to point out, you are a sub 3 million market cap, and I've seen companies like this before that are this level, and it doesn't take a lot to move the needle. So, with that in mind, if someone's listening, Andy, not following the story of Tuple, give them three reasons why they should add you to their watch list, please.
Yeah, three reasons. I think we are obviously, clearly, we're demonstrating that we're a high growth business. We're a business that's increasing its gross margin, so the gross margining is going in the right way. And all of those gross margins, really important to understand that they're all contracted gross margins. And typically, as I said, over 80% of our customers are signing for 24 months or longer. And thirdly, and most importantly, I think we've got a leadership team that over the last 12 to 18 months have delivered exactly what they said they would deliver. And I think there's a huge potential to increase and develop that market cap further.
Excellent stuff. Andy, it's good to chat to you, fella. And, you've got a lot of things going on. You're getting busier and busier. So no doubt we'll chat in the not-too-distant future with a future update.
Thank you very much. And thank you very much for your time, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Roger Murphy, CEO of African Battery Metal. That's ABM. And I've got to say, some people may not have heard of that name, but it was formerly known as Sula, S-U-L-A. Thanks for joining me, Roger.
Great to be chatting with you.
Now, first and foremost, why the change of name, Roger?
Well, it reflects, the change in focus of the company. Sula, as we used to be called, was focused on gold exploration and iron in Sierra Leone. We've announced a couple of weeks ago that we have injected some cobalt assets in Congo into the company. We will be advancing those assets. We've also raised some capital from a group of new shareholders in order to do that exploration and to reflect our changed focus. We've renamed the company African Battery Metals with the ticker ABM, as you said.
Excellent stuff. So you got a new name, a new focus, a rejigged sort of management team there. And so take us forward. What are you actually doing and what's the next sort of milestone you're hoping to achieve?
Well, the next step will be getting on the ground to look at these cobalt assets in Katanga in southern DRC. Of course, we've done our due diligence. We've had some of our team on the ground before we parted with money and bought the assets. But the next step is going to be much more systematic exploration. We've got some of our team will be in Congo next week and starting, starting the prospecting and the exploration process. I should say these are not entirely greenfield licenses. Within 20 to 30 kilometers, there's half a dozen major mines, which are cobalt and copper miners, and there's artisanals on the license. And we've had independent geologists on the license before we bought it, who've reported up to 2.5% cobalt in little pits dug by artisanals, and 2.5% is extremely high grade.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's probably good to say, because first time you've been on the podcast, can you take us through some of your background and how you came to be here now, Roger?
Well, like you, Justin, I'm Welsh, and I grew up in South Wales and with family in the coal mining industry. Grandfather was a coal miner, geology at university, straight to work in Africa. Worked in Africa for about half a dozen years, but spent most of my career as a broker in the city, run a number of broking sales desks for a number of companies. And then about 2 or 3 years ago, I decided that it was time that I, became more of an entrepreneur and took, a reasonable chunk of my own money, and with some partners from a private group called Medini, we bought 26% of Sula, and I've been running the company now since October 2016.
So you've put your money where your mouth is, and of course, are you quite? You've got to be quite optimistic here. So you've raised some money, and are you quite optimistic?
Yeah, and to reflect that optimism, it was a tough time the last few months of last year, and I paid myself zero. All the salary that I deferred, I converted into stock at the same price that we raised money recently, which was 0.05 pennies. I think what's different about the company going forward as well is that, there is secular and structural growth in batteries. Everybody knows the switch from internal combustion engine cars towards battery-driven cars, Tesla or Volkswagen, substituting petrol for batteries over the next 5 years, and all those batteries consume a lot of cobalt. Cobalt's in massive short supply. Every broker in the world is forecasting continued or high prices, or even higher prices, and so we've got a backdrop of a buoyant global switch into batteries, which I hope will contribute to our story as well as our success on the ground.
Yeah, well, I think even this week, Ford announced they're doubling their investment to $11 billion in electric cars. And I've never known anything like this. I think it's generally, it's a very exciting time, especially if you're an investor, because you can see this is happening over the next, 5, 10, 20 years. It's going to be a massive shift towards electric vehicles. And all you have to do is look at the kind of commodities needed. And, every government in the world pretty much has said they're going to ban diesel and petrol cars at certain times. So yeah, it's a significant seismic shift. And so, looking forward, Roger, I mean, over the next 12 months, what are you hoping to achieve here?
Well, I think the next 3 to 4 months is going to be getting on the ground, geologists with kind of XRF guns, which are the sample guns that give you the cobalt grade, but doing geology, looking at what the artisanals are doing, putting pits in, exploration on our two licenses, and then we should have a lot of news flow coming out of that, assay results, progress. I think I'd be quite keen to update people with photos of as we go along as well, and we put those on our website at abmplc.com. But further out, I think, as you say, this is a big secular growth, and one of the, I think, real strengths that we have is we have a team through our alliance with technical advisors Medini, who, between three men, have over 100 years experience of operating mines in Africa. And one of our one of those three partners is a Congolese metallurgist who used to run mines in Congo, spent more than 10 years of his working career there. And so I think the opportunity over time is, and I don't think this is in the next 6 months, but at some point it may make, I think, the land grab going on for good quality cobalt projects. We may look to add to the portfolio over time, but the next few months is about getting the kind of the rubber to hit the road on our existing projects.
Yeah, excellent stuff. And obviously, when you take on a company like this, Roger, you have ambitions in mind, and could you share any of those ambitions? Where do you hope to be in the next few years' time?
Look, there've been a number of cobalt companies in Australia and Canada. The share prices are up way over 100%, but there's a bit of a gap in London. I'd like to fill that gap, and the next most of this year is probably going to be about cobalt. But further on, as you rightly said, there's other metals, and those include nickel, maybe over time vanadium, lithium, of course. Which we may look to add to that. So I would like to turn this company into a mid-cap cobalt and other battery metal producer, and make all shareholders, of which of course I'm a significant one, a lot of money. So I'm really amused by this, and I'm pretty excited. The one thing I want to say, Justin, you may ask me anyway, but Congo comes with some issues about security, but also ethical standards, and everybody in our team years in the mining industry, and we will have no truck with anything, you know, which is not completely ethical and morally justifiable. So, you know, this stuff about child labour, you know, that there will be nothing like that we ever get involved in.
Yeah. And as far as, you know, dealing, I don't know how much dealings you've had so far there, but is it relatively an easy jurisdiction to work in?
No, it's not. But then, you know, Congo, what people don't realize is Congo is the size of Western Europe. And, you know, the politics in the northeastern Congo, you know, with, you know, have been documented is quite difficult. But down in Katanga, where we're operating, it's close to Zambia. It's, you know, the most stable area of Congo. It's also the area which many of the world's mines already operate. So there's much more of an infrastructure. And to add to that, you know, we have a team through our alliance with technical advisors, Madini, who, you know, between three men have over 100 years experience of operating mines in Africa. And one of those three partners is a Congolese metallurgist who used to run mines in Congo, spent more than 10 years of his working career there.
Okay, excellent stuff. Well, Roger, if someone's listening and likes the sound of this, the new strategy, the refresh of management and the direction you're taking, but are not following the story, give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, I think the first thing is we're almost unique in London in being exposed to battery metals. Easy name to remember, cobalt. Prices have doubled. They probably continue to double. Second reason, we've got a management team that can operate in Congo and has many years of doing so. And thirdly, you know, we're going to be high profile and I'll be doing my best to drive this company to a much higher price. And I think we're pretty lowly valued at the moment.
Excellent stuff, Roger. Good to chat to you, and hopefully we speak again in the not-too-distant future.
Thank you, Justin. It's been a pleasure.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. John, thanks for joining me.
Morning. Thank you for calling.
Yes. Well, I know you've been away for a while, and you've been abroad, and you've caught a bug as well. So, but you're back into work, facing it like a soldier, like a man there. And even though you've got the old man flu, which would take a lot of people out, John. A lot of people wouldn't get out of bed with that. But you've soldiered on. So anyway, did you have a nice, you know, festive period?
Yes, it's good to get away and reflect on things from a bit of a distance. So happy to do that, and just sorry that everything isn't moving faster. You know, everyone requires a break once in a while, and you know, it's tough on these mining guys. You know, the stress hits people, and you know, there is one mining guy I know who got off a plane and died, and he'd been put under huge pressure because he'd been put into bankruptcy by another firm that I won't name right now. And you know, it's tough out there sometimes.
Yeah, well, you got to take a break. It's awful. Yeah, you've got to take a break to sort of, as I say, recharge the batteries, and that's significant, I suppose, when we say what's relevant in some ways, because a couple of companies you've covered a few times now, and one of them has interests, actually, in sort of the battery space, I suppose, and that's Codal, because the last time they released their final results, I think it was, but before that, it was quite an unexpected release about some issue about licenses that they have. I mean, explain this, John, because it's put a bit of doubt into the market here, and Codal are now hitting sort of lows. So explain what the issue is with the license there. New license application with the RNS, but what was going on?
There was a license that was allowed to lapse, but as it was explained to me, a license was allowed to lapse in Mali. Mm-hmm. Normally, when a license lapses, one just reapplies and it's granted. But of course, there were some clever local people who were there in the Ministry of Mines who jumped into that license and took legal possession of it. The Ministry of Mines stepped in to intervene on behalf of Codal Minerals. So the agreements with Codal Minerals are actually not affected. So Codal Minerals still has the rights to the licenses that it had before. But some of the details of those licenses have changed. So from an investor perspective, there's nothing to worry about here.
Yeah.
But yes, there has been a bit of something going on in Mali and just a little bit of change to the paperwork there.
So you said it does
happen from time to time in the sector.
Yeah.
And it is something that license holders need to watch out for. But you see, Codal Minerals is not the owner of the underlying license. It has an agreement with the owner, and the owner then let that lapse. And so, but it only applies to a very small part of the license. And even on that small part of the license, Kodal Minerals now has an agreement with the new license owner, and there's no change from their perspective.
Okay, so there's no. I mean, Kodal did say at the end they will provide on that release they will provide a further updates on the progress of the new license applications, any clarifications, and I think that's what's sort of needed, you know, because they did say that local company, is it Triumvirate Mining, I think it was called, and so you said at the start there the Ministry of Mines, someone in the Ministry of Mines jumped on that license, or that, or Triumvirate are not connected to the Ministry of Mines, are they?
Well, it'll be in the geological department where people state claims and where the records are kept. And then the Ministry of Mines will manage things on top of that. So, but, of course, in Mali, they are acutely aware of their international reputation. They derive a huge amount of revenue from mining in the country. And they don't want anything to, they don't want to upset any international mining companies, particularly if anyone's listed in London. So there is no problem from a Kodal perspective.
No, exactly. I mean, there are, you know, questionable jurisdictions in Africa, but Mali has often been touted as a friendly jurisdiction and very easy to work in. So that's good news. But as far as Kodal itself, just remind people of the story there, John, if you could, and what they're doing.
Well, they're developing a lithium license, and they're developing a resource on that. They're right next door to Birimian Limited, which, if you remember, last year received a takeover offer of 108 million Australian dollars from a Chinese group. The Chinese group, called Sui Chin these days, was not able to get the money out of China at the time, which was not a problem that was unique to them.
They
then felt slightly insulted by comments made by the board of Birimian Limited, who then, I think, fell out amongst themselves. But the Chinese group then put money into Kodal Minerals, seeing that was an easier thing to do. It was a smaller amount of money required at the time for potentially the same bang for their buck. Or a larger bang for their buck, maybe. It's worth keeping an eye on Birimian Limited because they're a long way ahead in terms of resource size and development, and in terms of mining plan and the economic plan for the extraction of lithium concentrate from that project. It may be that the clever thing to do is to bang heads together and combine Kodal with Birimian Limited to create a larger resource and a larger plan. But that's forward thinking, and it may be that Birimian will be large enough on its own, and Kodal may be large enough on its own to warrant standalone operations. And we don't know yet. We just have to wait to see.
Yeah. And so far, the results Kodal have produced there look quite positive, don't they?
Yeah, they're definitely at the higher end of the spectrum of lithium spodumene projects. And as we see in Australia, Well, Australia is now the largest producer of lithium, and that comes exclusively from hard rock spodumene projects in Australia. So that's a good thing to follow.
Yeah, and do you know what? I mean, we know that the demand for this kind of commodity is not going away because even this week, I think Ford announced they're doubling their budget spend or investment on electric vehicles to $11 billion. So we know there's plenty of demand there. So it's a long-term sort of thing, this.
Well, looking at the battery technologies being adopted by BMW and others, if anything, I think the amounts of lithium will rise, but the amounts of other metals within those batteries will fall. And that's the focus, is to focus on batteries with higher capacity and lower risk from a metal supply perspective. And there is no great risk for battery producers in terms of lithium supply, because there is more than enough lithium in the Earth's crust for extraction.
Yeah, excellent stuff. Okay, well, that's Kodal Minerals, and I've got to say I do own some shares in those because I want exposure to the lithium side of it. But, it's KOD if you want to sort of do some research on that. Okay, and also a company you've talked about quite a bit on here is Georgian Mining Corporation, GEO, and they had an announcement today, Georgian, about board change, I should say. Take us through this, John.
Well, it's a minor board change. Michael Struthers, who was brought in 3 months ago and has actually been a consultant to the company for 6 months, he's gone onto the board as chief operating officer. He was made the COO back in November. But he stepped up to the board to replace Martin Churchhouse. Martin Churchhouse is a technical man, but is more of a geologist, and was very happy to step down from the board to give Michael the sort of lead role in pushing the new mine forwards. Michael Struthers and Greg Kunzel are out in Georgia at the moment. I dragged Greg out of a meeting earlier where they are discussing with the joint venture partners details of the work programs for the year. That includes everything from future mine development of the much larger copper mine to the small gold oxide development and details relating to that, as well as the forward-looking exploration program for 2018 and all the budgets required for it. So there's a lot being discussed, a lot happening at the moment. I'm told the relationship has developed very positively and the discussions are going really well.
Excellent stuff. Well, that's Gio there, and we should get Greg on, hopefully, because Greg's been on the podcast quite a few times, so we'll chase him up as well. John, listen, thanks for that, and good to chat, and hopefully we'll catch up next week.
Look forward to speaking then.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Kora Gold, that's C-O-R-A. Of course, had the CEO, John, recently. At four, Cyanode Holdings, Cyan, C-Y-A-N. At three, Rehobol Resources, RBD. At two, Hummingbird Resources, HUM. And at number one, it's United Oil and Gas, that's UOG. Hopefully we'll get Brian Larkin, the CEO of United Oil and Gas, on the podcast soon. Top five most liked analysis are as follows. At five, Imperial Energy, production and sales from Dempsey well commence. At four, Hurricane Energy, listing and governance committee update. At three, Blenheim Natural Resources, result of general meeting. At two, Georgian Mining Corp, board change. And at number one, it's Blenheim Natural Resources, GM statement. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hear the intriguing stories behind some of the world's best love songs in the FT's Life of a Song podcast. From soul to funk, to punk to jazz. Discover how classic songs like Smells Like Teen Spirit, Yesterday, and Stairway to Heaven were born. Search online or listen at ft.com/podcasts. Plus, don't miss the new Life of a Song book, featuring a compilation of 50 songs that have appeared in FT weekend columns. Pick up your copy from Amazon, your local bookshop, or give a gift to someone who'd enjoy this brilliant literary mixtape.